Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's continue this morning in Kapitel Nuntes, chapter 59 in Tehillim. Our shir is dedicated by Leah Natan Berry in memory of Eliezer Avram Tzvi ben Psach Yaleib and Avram Chaim ben Gedalia. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an Aliyah and the families in the Chama. So let's begin. Lam Natzeach at Hashchis leDavid Michtam b'Shloach Shaul vayishmeru es habayis lahamisam. So here already again, based on our learning of the Prakim of Navi in the past, so we already know that David HaMelech is teaching us an important lesson within this kapitel. We see again, Lam Natzeach al Tashchis, we'll talk about that wording, what exactly that means, al Tashchis. Michtam, remember again, whenever we see Michtam, what does that teach us? Good, that there is a life lesson here. That not only is David HaMelech saying something which was personally relevant, not only was David HaMelech saying something that is reflective of the circumstances in which he is living, but David HaMelech ultimately again is trying to teach us a lesson that is a life-altering, life-affirming, life-necessity lesson. So what's happening? Now this is one of these unique kapitlah where David HaMelech gives us the explicit historical realities in which this kapitel was written. You know, sometimes you learn Tehillim, and we always try to figure out what's happening in David HaMelech's life around the time of this kapitel. What's happening? What is he going through? Because if you understand the circumstances that David HaMelech is living through, then you can begin to understand a little bit more of the words. This is one of the unique kapitlah where David HaMelech does not force us to go ahead and investigate, but he tells us straight out. When did I write this kapitel? Bishloach Shaul vayishmeru es habayis lahamiso. When Shaul set up a guard, a perimeter around my home, in an effort to kill me. So we are familiar with this story. Remember again, very quickly, David HaMelech is first introduced to Shaul when? When he kills Goliath, right? Remember, again, the Jews are at war with the Plishtim. The Plishtim have this mighty and fierce warrior, a man by the name of Goliath. And for whatever the reason, there are many reasons, no one was brave enough to take on this mighty Philistine warrior. This young boy, who was not even in the army at the time, his brothers were, but he was not, for some reason feels overwhelmed with a sense of confidence. Actually, really what it is, it's a righteous indignation. Because the Gemara says that Goliath is coming out every single day and taunting the Jewish people, taunting the God of Israel. David HaMelech says, enough is enough, and he's willing to go ahead and confront this mighty Philistine warrior. I don't want to spoil the end of the story for you, but you know how it ends. David HaMelech ends up killing Goliath, and that initiates his meteoric rise to greatness and to power. He very quickly goes ahead and becomes not only a member of the king's army, but an esteemed member. He rises through the ranks exceptionally quickly to the point that he is the chief of staff. He's the head of Shaul's army, which essentially makes him, I don't know if it makes him the second or third most powerful man. You have the king, you have the Kohen Gadol, but he's certainly in the top three. Afterwards, Shaul HaMelech marries off his daughter Michal to David, a wonderful and beautiful shidduch, but then things begin to very quickly sour when Shaul realizes that David is becoming more popular. And remember again, the backdrop to this is that Shaul failed to comply with the divine decree to wipe out Amalek. That was the last straw, the last mistake in a series of mistakes where Shmuel comes and has a very difficult conversation with Shaul, where essentially he tells Shaul, you're done. By Mascha Hashem Melech, God no longer wants you to be king. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is done with you, and your monarchy is going to be given to someone even greater than you, someone more deserving of you. Shaul's walking around with this knowledge that someone else is going to depose him. He sees David's meteoric rise to power, and he realizes that David is the next king of Israel. Couple that with the fact that David is from the tribe of Yehuda. Monarchy is always supposed to come from Yehuda, and Shaul realizes that David is his replacement. That the very young man that Shaul brought into his home, the very young man that Shaul really elevated to greatness, is now going to become his replacement. Shaul doesn't handle this piece of information well, begins to see David as a threat. Again, we've spoken a lot about that in Pesach, we don't have to go through that again. And so this particular kapitel deals with the following situation. A very unique piece of family intrigue. Shaul assumes that his daughter's allegiance is with him and not with her husband. You know, this is like, in-laws 101, right? In-laws 101 is never, ever, chas v'shalom, do anything that makes your child choose between you, the parents, and the spouse. Because if you make your child make that decision, you might win, but your child always loses, right? Parents have to know, you know, the whole idea of parenting is the child is like the bird in the nest. So it's beautiful to have the bird in the nest, but at some point in time, the most wonderful, the pinnacle of parental accomplishment is when the bird is able to leave the nest, fly away and make a nest of its own. And it doesn't always need to check back and say, what do you think about my nest? How do you feel about my nest? Would you like to come over to my nest? Like, the child needs to have their own nest. And again, I can't tell you, we laugh about it, but so many terrible shalom bayis problems are caused because of well-meaning parents who forget that the moment you bring your child to the chuppah, truth is even before that, but at least the moment you bring them to the chuppah, your active involvement in your child's life has come to a close. At that point in time, if you are going to be involved, it is by invitation only. And that invitation has a start time, and that invitation, this is very therapeutic for me, right? And that invitation has... My mother listens to this shit. We're good. And that invitation has an end time. Shaul HaMelech thinks that his daughter's allegiance is with him. He thinks so. He tells Michal, here's what's going to happen. Your husband has become a threat to my monarchy. What is a threat to my monarchy is a threat to my family. You, my daughter, are part of my family. He doesn't realize, yes, she's a part of his family, but she's much more connected to her husband than she is to her father, as she should be. So he tells her about the plan. The plan is your husband's going to go to sleep at night, let him have a good night's sleep, and the next morning my men are going to be surrounding your home. And as soon as he comes out, they're going to chop him, they're going to bring him to the palace, and we're going to execute him. What's the crime of David that he's going to be executed for? Morid b'malchus. Shaul accused him of treason. He's conspiring and plotting against the king. Of course, David is not doing any of that. David has no interest in the monarchy, but this was going to be the crime. And of course, that's a very serious crime within Jewish society. Morid b'malchus is, you know, conspiring against the king or in any way undermining the power of the king is punishable by immediate death. So that's what's going to happen. Michal tells David about this story, and in a very dramatic story, and it's dramatic not just for David, it's dramatic for Michal as well. Michal helps her husband escape by lowering him out of the window. Remember, again, she puts stuff under his covers. There's a person there, and David, realizing that his wife is imperiling herself to save him, says, "Tell your father that I threatened you. Tell your father that I threatened you with violence, with death, so that he shouldn't think that you aided me, that you conspired against me. Tell him that I threatened you and you had no choice but to help me." And of course, David HaMelech escapes. You know, the amazing story, the amazing thing about the stories of Tanakh, I've mentioned this before, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs writes that, you know, in the world of literature, there are two different types of stories. There are myths and there are fairy tales. Right? So myths, if you look at Greek mythology, it's always the same story, which is man plans, and the gods, who are much more, even more petty than men in Greek mythology, just do anything and everything to pull the rug out from under man. Right? Fairy tales, how do fairy tales end? Everyone lived happily ever after. So Rabbi Sachs makes an amazing observation. He says that Judaism doesn't have mythology, chas v'shalom, because we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our greatest advocate. But we also don't have fairy tales. There is not one story in the body of Tanakh that ends and everyone lived happily ever after. There's no such story. The Torah ends with the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. I've mentioned this before. Even Purim, we read the end of the Megillah. We're all happy. Shoshana Siakov, Zahala Visamecha. And everyone's incredible with Simcha, except for the heroine. Right? Except for the heroine of the story, except for Esther Amalka, who is locked in a life with a man that she does not want to, or at least did not want to be married to. She's stuck. The heroine is stuck. David HaMelech escapes out the window and he goes on to forge an incredible destiny. Who's kind of left behind in the dust? Michal. And Michal's story becomes even just more tragic because then her father, in a bizarre twist of events, marries her off to another man. She, of course, can't marry another man. She's married to David. So her life ends off in solitude and heartbreak. So she's So, not, you know, David HaMelech's story, even David HaMelech's story doesn't end happily ever after. You know, remember again, David's final moments of his life are lived how? What's happening in David's final moments? He's dying. What's happening? Adonio ben Chagis, one of his sons, is proclaiming himself as king. David's not even dead yet. He's dying. He's literally moments away from death. And his son, who is not the heir apparent, right? David, nothing ever ends, which is very important, by the way, because it's just an aside. Sometimes we try to create lives that are, and everyone lived happily ever after. And we're so frustrated when things don't go that way. Don't try to build a happily ever life, ever after life, because to a certain degree, it is an exercise in futility. Life is filled with incredible simcha. Life is should be filled with incredible joy. But there's heartache, there's heartbreak, there's tragedy, there's sadness, there's setbacks, and that is always part of the human condition. So in this particular kapitel, David HaMelech tells us exactly what it is that's happening. Bishloach Shaul vayishmuras habayis lahamiso. So this is the episode, ultimately, again, where Shaul is circling the home in an effort to go ahead and instead David HaMelech. Pasuk Beis. So let's get into the kapitel. Hatzilini ma'ayvai elokai mimiskomamai tisagvini. So then the kapitel really goes on to a certain degree, echo the same theme that we've seen throughout many of the chapters of Tehillim. Literally translated, save me from my enemies, my God. Strengthen me against those who rise up against me. Hatzilini mipoalei oven, ume'anshei damim hoshieni. Save me from workers of iniquity. Rescue me from bloodthirsty men. For behold, they lurked for my soul. Strong men lodge against me, neither for my transgression nor my sin. And David HaMelech then goes on. So you already know, we've been learning Tehillim long enough to know. So how does the kapitel go on? David HaMelech says, everyone's against me. Everyone's betraying me. Everyone's hurting me. And then what's the end? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help me. Ribono Shel Olam, I know that you have my back. I know that you never leave my side. I know that even when everyone else forsakes me, you never do. But what I want to draw your attention to is something that I think is exceptionally amazing. So if you go back, I want to focus just really on one word or one phrase today, which is in Pasuk Beis, in the second verse, Hatzileni me'ayvai, Elokai. My God, save me from my enemies. My enemies. Now, what's unique about this is as follows, which is, remember, David HaMelech tells us the explicit context of the kapitel, which is, who's the enemy in this kapitel? Shaul. It's very clear, again, Bishloach Shaul vayishmuras habayis lahamiso. The soldiers who are there, they're not really David's enemies. What are they? They're following orders. I mean, remember again, they're sold on a narrative. The narrative is the king told them, together with everyone else as well, that this individual, again, is a threat to the continuity of the monarchy. So why does David HaMelech say the plural? Why may I vai? Let's take a look at number two. So in 2 and 3, the Al-Sheikh and the Malbim both say something very similar, which is really quite beautiful. The Al-Sheikh writes, to Hatsini me oivai elokai, hi meyish shnei sugei oivin. Listen to how profound this is. The Al-Sheikh writes, there are two different types of enemies. Now the truth is, maybe there are more than two types of enemies, but for our purposes, the Al-Sheikh says, two types of enemies. Ha'echod he ma'aha avonos oivei ha'nefesh. One is one's personal sins. The averos that I commit, my averos, become the enemies of my soul. Enemies of I am often my own worst enemy. So the negative choice, the bad decisions I make, the negative activities I engage in, those become my enemies, my own internal enemies. Vasheni, heim b'nei adam, ay ve'aguf. And then there are external. So the Al-Sheikh essentially says there are internal enemies and there are external enemies. The Al-Sheikh understands that the internal enemy, ultimately, again, are my averos, which, if you think about it, is such an incredible way to look at sin. You see, often we go through life with a very infantile perception or conception of sin. That, why don't I do? So, again, I'm faced with the opportunity to do an avera. Why am I not going to do the avera? What keeps you from doing the avera? I don't want to get punished. Right? It's amazing. It's amazing how even though we become so sophisticated and so intellectual in so many other areas of life, theologically, we're like still an embryo. Theologically, we're so underdeveloped that sometimes our catalyst for, no, I don't want to sin because I don't want to get punched. I don't want to get patched. I don't want to get stoned. I don't want to get hanged. I just don't want that. I have like plans for today. You know, I'm not interested in getting struck down by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So first of all, you understand, by the way, there are plenty of people who sin. Plenty of people. And they're not dying and nothing's happening to them. Okay, so that's a different. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu catches up with everything. But more than that, we strive to be a bit more theologically sophisticated. I don't sin. You know why I don't sin, says the Al-Sheikh? Because when I do something negative, by definition, I'm working against myself. I want to accomplish things in life. There are things I want to do. I have goals. I have dreams. I have aspirations. There are positive accomplishments I want to do. And when I commit an Aveira, ultimately, again, what I've done is I've pulled the rug out from under myself. Forget about the onesh, forget about the punishment for just a second. Says the Al-Sheikh, the real power of sin is that it's an oyvei hanefesh. It becomes the enemy of my soul. My soul is powering me forward to do great things, to accomplish wonderful things. And when I sin, I have created an internal enemy. Sin is an internal sabotage mechanism. When I do an Avera, what I do is I lose my positive trajectory, which, if you think about it, is an incredible idea. Rechaim Shmulevitz writes, he says that if one tries to understand, we've spoken about this before, about the psychology of sin. That why do people sin? Objectively, I know sin is a bad thing. I know whatever benefit or pleasure I'm going to get from an Avera, it's limited, it's temporal, but the fallout from chet could be eternal. So why do I do it? At the end of the day, I do it because I feel I could do this one negative thing, but I could still be a good person. Right? And I could still continue forward in all of my other ones. Okay, we all live with inconsistencies. That's the bad thing I do. But that's not going to impact all the good that I do. Now, that is true to a certain degree. A person could sin and still be a wonderful and good person. There's no shaila. But every single time I do an Avera, it takes the wind out of my sails in a positive way. Every single time I sin, that leaves its mark and its residual impact on my soul. So that same koach, that same energy, which was meant to propel me forward, has now been diverted and used for something else, which is not going in the same direction. That's the Oyvei HaNefesh. The Malbim says, and he says, and how I'm going to focus on his wording just a little bit, is he says, me'oyvei me'miskomamai ha'oyev b'leiv. So the Malbim, again, same idea as the Al-Sheikh, he's struck by David HaMelech's use of the plural. Save me from my enemies. My enemies. Who are the enemies? So the Malbim says, sometimes it's ha'oyev b'leiv. There's an enemy inside my heart. V'ha'miskomim hu b'poel. And then there's an external enemy as well. So both the Al-Sheikh and the Malbim understand that David HaMelech, when he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, save me from my enemies, plural, there are two different types, there are two different enemies that David HaMelech is waging against. One is the internal enemy, what the Malbim calls the Oyvei HaNefesh, what the Malbim calls the Oyev Balev, the enemy in my heart, the enemy in my heart, and one is the external enemy. What I found, so first of all, it's a striking thing because again, David HaMelech over here is talking about Sheol. What internal enemies are we referring to? But I think what's even more dramatic is, if you notice, both the Malbim and the Al-Sheikh essentially are saying the same thing, which is there's internal enemies and there's external enemies. Which enemy do they both speak about first?
The internal enemy.
The internal enemy. At the end of the day, we all possess internal enemies and external enemies. And what David HaMelech ultimately is trying to teach us, and this is part of the Michtam, is that the battle of life does not begin with your external enemies. The battle of life does not begin with your external circumstances. The battle of life begins with the Oyev Balev, with the enemy who resides in my heart. So I'd like to try to discuss a little bit today and draw a little bit from the parsha, is what is this Oyev Balev? What is this internal enemy that David HaMelech is making reference to? Now the simple answer is, it's not one thing. One could make the argument, that's what? That each of us have our own Oyev Balev. You know, the Arizal brings down, says, you know, the million-dollar question, maybe it's a multi-million-dollar question, that each of us ask ourselves every single day is what? Alright, the question that you need to be asking yourself every single day is, what am I doing here? As the Ramchal writes in his introduction to Mesilas Yesharim, Ma Chovaso Ba'olamo. Why am I here? Why am I here? This is an important question to ask every day. Why am I here? And by the way, the answer could change different days. It could be that today's Wednesday. I'm here for X today. Tomorrow, maybe my purpose is something else. Some people, their purpose is an overarching purpose. But again, if you can't answer that question, then you don't know if you're living correctly. You know, the scary part of life is a person could do, you could do mitzvahs, and you could do chasadim all day long. It doesn't mean you're actualizing your purpose. Each of us is put in the world for a particular purpose. Our goal is to figure out what that purpose is. Therefore, says the Ramchal, the Arizal says, so how do I know what my purpose is? He says something amazing. He says, that which you struggle with most is what you are put in this world to perfect. In other words, most of us, okay, we may have many weaknesses. Usually, most of us have one acute, Alibi, you're lucky if you just have one acute weakness, like one thing that I've been struggling with my entire life. So says the Arizal, he gets much more esoteric into the worlds of Gilgulim, about this neshamas coming back. He says, again, if you struggle, the one thing you struggle with in this world is most probably, again, the one thing that your neshama was not able to complete in a previous life, and that's why it's here again. So it could very well be that the oyev benefesh, there's not one answer. You have your oyev benefesh, you have your internal enemy, I have my internal enemy, and each of us have internal enemies. But I think, if we explore this a little bit further, that there are certain commonalities in the human condition that apply to all of us. So amazingly enough, I think we can find the answer to this in this week's parasha. Take a look at number 4. So the Torah tells us, this is in Parashas Bahar, so that we read double parashas this week, of Bahar and Bechul Kosai. So in Bahar, the Torah says as follows, V'lo sonu ish es amiso, which literally translated, you shall not wrong one man, his fellow Jew, V'yareisa me'elokecha, ki ani Hashem elokeichem. You shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. So obviously, this pasuk is a bit strange. What does it mean, V'lo sonu ish es amiso, you shouldn't wrong another person? Okay, and if God wouldn't have said that, then what? I would have gone around wronging people? Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us something more specific. So if you look at number 5, the Gemara Maseches Bava Metzia says something absolutely amazing. Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Lo Sonu Ish Es Amiso. What does it mean, you shall not wrong your fellow? What does that mean? Ba'onas Devarim HaKosuv Medaber. So the Gemara explains, this is called the concept of ona'as devarim. You know, in halacha, in choshe mishpat, in minor Torah, there's the concept of ona'a. Ona'a means not allowed to overcharge. Not to overcharge. You know, free markets, by definition, allow for a certain amount of variable, right? Variable pricing. But halacha says you are not allowed to overcharge a person more than a certain percentage. And if you do so, it could be that the transaction is void. That's monetary ona'a. Ona'as devarim is when you hurt another person with your words. This is not Lashon Hara. It's not Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, Rechilos, that's not this. This, Onaz Dvarim, means I can't verbally harm another individual. For example, Hakeitz, what does this mean? Listen to this. Im Hayer Bal Tshuva. If a person was a Bal Tshuva, Al Yomar Lo, Zechar Ma'asecha Harishonim. If a person is a Bal Tshuva, so you know, sometimes it could happen, a person is a Bal Tshuva, the person gives you Musar, you don't like the Musar, as most often we don't like Musar. So it's very tempting to say, what? You're giving me Musar? You? You still have crab cakes in between your teeth, right? You're giving me Musar? You know where you came from? Who are you? You know, I'm an FFB. Right? What are you? You give me Musar. Or again, or for that matter, again, a person becomes about Shuva, and so you never ask them, so tell me, what was it like? What was it like? What was life like? Tell me some of your war stories. You don't do that to a Baal Tshuva. Why? Because ultimately, again, what that could do for an individual is it could awaken a sense of pain for an individual. And therefore, again, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling us is don't taunt a person about his or her personal past for one simple reason. He or she cannot change it. It is what it is. So onas devarim, don't remind the Baal Tshuva about his past. Im haya ben gerim, if a person was a descendant of converts, al yomar lo zechor ma'aseh avosecha, do not make a person feel bad about their lack of yichus. If a person is a children, now it's interesting. You see, people don't realize that some of our greatest leaders throughout times were descendants of Gerim. Rabbi Akiva was a descendant of Gerim. Rabbi Meir was a great grandson of the Roman Emperor Nero. So again, sometimes we get all caught up in our yichus, but again, says the Gemara, if somebody doesn't have the most incredible family pedigree, the most incredible yichus, al yomar lo zechor ma'aseh avosecha. Don't tell the person, oh, remember what your forefathers did. Don't taunt a person about his familial past, because again, a person can't change that as well. Im haya ger uba lilmo Torah, if a person converted and they want to come learn Torah, al yomar lo person converts, right? And again, a person can say, look, you lived such a morally bankrupt life, and now you want to come learn Torah? It's not appropriate. You can't say things like this. It's very important. If a person ultimately, again, was suffering, if a person was ill, a person had to bury their children, so you know, when Eov lost everything, when Eov's friends came to comfort him, they did exactly what a person should never ever chas v'shalom did. You know what they said to him? Said Eov, listen, God is just. So if this stuff is happening to you, I'm just saying, people always say things, I'm just saying, maybe you want to do a little cheshbon ha'nefesh, you know, maybe you want to take stock, because the Ribono Shel Olam is perfect. The Gemara says, essentially, don't be stupid. Meaning, you don't understand why things happen in this world. You don't understand the chashbonos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't understand why people get sick. We don't understand why some people have healthy mishpachas, some people don't have healthy mishpachas. Some people suffer through tragic circumstances, some people don't. So because we don't know, and because these are Dvarim Ha'omdim Ruma Shel, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's area of expertise, don't say anything. Because when you go ahead and you try to say something, not only is it not going to accomplish its intended purpose, but what? Very often it leads additional hurt in its wake. You know, people, and again, you see this, unfortunately, very often by Shiva homes, right? Where a person comes in, and you know, they're very sweet, they go over, they take the hand of the oval, I know how you feel. You don't know how I feel. You don't know how I feel. First of all, I say, yeah, but I lost my parent also. That's fine. You don't know my relationship with my parents. You don't know my childhood. You don't know my life. You don't know about the things that I wanted to say that I didn't say, the things that I should have said that I didn't say, the things that I did say that I shouldn't have said. So don't tell me how I feel. You don't know how I feel. Maybe you also had a loss in your life, but you don't know how I feel. So the Gemara says, if you say something, even well-intentioned, but you end up hurting someone else, that is ona'as dvarim. That ultimately, again, is an abuse and misuse of one's speech. He goes on. He gives other examples also, which are in the scope of things, much less dramatic. If you skip down a little bit, he says, Rabbi Huda Omer, aflo yitla inav ala mekach, bisha'a she'in lo damin. Don't go ahead and shop for something if you don't have money. Now, this, by the way, is a generally good klal, in general, right? Don't shop for something if you don't have money, right? But again, the Gemara is taking this from a different perspective. What's the perspective over here? If I walk into Chaim Yankel's store, and he sees me perusing the merchandise, what happens? He gets excited. Maybe I'm going to make a sale. Now again, every vendor understands that there's the potential to make the sale or not to make the sale. What the Gemara is saying is, if I have no money, then one thing is for sure, which is what? I told my wife, this is an explicit proof that window shopping is prohibited. Right? But, she didn't buy it. Okay, so in any event, if you take a look at number six, that wasn't a pun, right? If you take a look at number six, Surah Baruch HaSfardi, over here, you could see a little bit by, he says the same idea as well. He quotes over here, Perish, skip down three lines in after the period. Perish, Kishetola Einav B'mekach, Choshev balmecho shelokho. When I go ahead and I inquire about the item, so the vendor thinks that I'm about to purchase it. V'cheivan she'in lo damim ein alocho. Now again, so I want to be clear. It doesn't mean that I can't go into a store and inquire about an object without committing myself to buying it. That's fine. That's part of doing business. What he's talking about over here is where there's absolutely, it never even dawned on me that I'm going to buy it. I'm not going to buy it. Okay, so the point is, you see all of these different examples of ona'as devarim, harming someone else with my speech. And what you see over here, by the way, is something really dramatic, which is, by the way, that last piece of purchasing, what is that telling me? Don't waste people's time. Don't go ahead and do something which promises or indicates that you are going to take certain action when you know that you're not going to do it. Which, by the way, has incredible ramifications and applications. Don't commit to do something if you're not going to do it. Don't give someone the hope or the expectation that you're going to be there for them in some way, when in fact you have absolutely no intention of ever being there for that individual. Now, sometimes we think that we're doing people a favor when we make them feel good that I'm there for them, when I'm really not going to be there for them. Right? And what the Gemara tells us is, no, you're actually making things worse, because then what's going to happen? There's going to be the time of need and you're not going to be present. And when you're not present, it's just going to exacerbate the person's pain. So we see the concept of ona'as devarim. You can't harm someone else with your words. You can't taunt a person about his personal past. You can't taunt a person about his familial past. You can't tell a person that because of his mistakes, he's compromised his ability for the future. Don't try to be God and suddenly pontificate and give various theological interpretations as to why bad things happen to good people and how everything is part of the cosmic plan of the Ribono Shel Olam. It's all true, but no one needs to hear it come out of your mouth. For one simple reason, it helps no one and potentially exacerbates the pain of others. Don't waste a person's time, right? Whether it's the merchant or whether it's the person you're promising a favor for. What's the point of this mitzvah? Take a look at number 5. So the Sefer HaChinuch writes, he says, 5 Aleph, Sholahanos Echa Miyisra B'dvarim, I'm sorry, number 7, I'm sorry. Shalahonos Echam Yisrael B'dvarim, Kolomar Shalom, Nemra L'Yisrael D'varim Sheyachivu, V'yatziru, V'ein Bo Korach L'Yazar Mehem. So the way the Sefer HaChinuch explains it is, don't say hurtful or harmful words that a person can't do anything about. You know, sometimes you have to give a person difficult feedback. However you want, feedback, critique, criticism, mussar. So, and again, it's important because there's a mitzvah to do that, right? There's a mitzvah of halacha. There's a mitzvah of rebuke. That if I see someone doing something wrong, again, in the right, delicate way, if I care for that person, I have to give them the feedback. That's fine, provided the person could do something about it. If you notice all of these examples of ona'as devarim, these are pointing things out to a person that he or she cannot do anything about. And as such, all those words will do is what? Cause the individual pain. So therefore, again, he says, Ve'ein bo korach lazar mehem v'alzeh, ne'amar v'lo sonu ish esamiso. Paragraph B, 7 days. Shoresh mitzvah zu yadua. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, what's the point of this mitzvah? Kila hula says shalom ben habrios. The goal is to create shalom. To create shalom, people should be sensitive about how they talk to one another. People should be sensitive about how they interact with one another. To recognize that even if I'm saying something that is factually true, just because it's fact doesn't mean it should be said. And just because I say something a certain way does not mean that what? That the person is going to hear it. Remember, again, this is the most challenging part of interpersonal relationships. That it's not just about measuring what you say and how you say it, but what? It's trying to figure out how the other person is going to hear it. That's it. So before you say it, I have to figure out how is this person going to hear what I'm about to say. Are they going to hear it the way I intended or hear it a different way? If it's going to be a different way, maybe it's better not to say it. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, all of this is to create a society of shalom. The Gadol HaShalom Shebo HaBracha Metzuya Ba'olam V'Kasha HaMachlokes. A society where there is shalom is a society where there is bracha. Because where kasha machlokes, dissent and disagreement and machlokes is very difficult. Kama klalos v'kama tzakalos tluyus. Because when there is machlokes, unfortunately, how many curses and stumbling blocks we find ourselves in. So I want to show you something interesting. So that's the mitzvah of losonu ish es amiso, this week's parasha. Comes on the Rambam in number 8. And the Rambam says something so beautiful. Umishu medaktek al atzmo biyosef. So this is in Hilchos Deos. Ostensibly nothing to do with our parashas. You know, the Rambam Hilchos Deos speaks about character traits. So he says, Mishu medaktek al atzmo biyosef. Someone who is meticulous with his or her behavior, specifically religious behavior and personal behavior, v'yisrachek midea beinonis ma'at letzadze uletzadze, nikra chassid. According to the Rambam, what's the definition of a chassid? Remember, what does chassid literally mean? Pious. A pious individual. Piety, chassidus, represents living on a spiritual plane above and beyond expectations, right? I'm expected to live up to the expectations. So if you live up to expectations, what do we call that? It's a Jew, right? A Jew is supposed to live up to expectations. That's it. You don't get a big shkayach for that. Yeah, that's it, right? No, right, when you show up to work and you're supposed to be there by 9 o'clock, no one's saying, great job, you got here by 9. I'm very proud of you. Wonderful. Whoa, you're going to leave by 5? Incredible. Thank you so much for coming on timely. There are expectations in life. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us expectations. So the job of a Jew is to live up to expectations. That's it. You want to go above and beyond expectations? First of all, again, no one says you have to go above and beyond expectations, because the expectations themselves are quite demanding. But if you choose to go above and beyond the expectations, that's called a chassid. A chassid is someone who lives beyond the normative expectations. He or she goes beyond that which the Kodesh Baruch Hu requires. Ketzad, Saddam gives an example. Ketzad, Mishin Esrachek Migova Halev, Ada Kotza Achron, Vieshofel Ruach Bioser, Nikra Chassid. Vizel Midas Chassidus. He gives an interesting example. The example is Gova Halev, what we call arrogance. Is a person allowed to have arrogance? Incorrect. A person is supposed to have a tiny little bit of arrogance, right? The Gemara Masechet Sota brings down that a Talmid Chacham is supposed to have shminish of a shminis, you know, like 1/64th of a measure of arrogance. And even us regular people are also supposed to have a little bit of arrogance, because a little bit of arrogance is not called arrogance. You know what it's called? It's called self-esteem. It's called self-worth. If you don't have just a little bit of that energy, a person could become a shmata. A person being self-effacing and learning how to yield is very good. But I want to tell you a little secret. You shouldn't always yield. It's good to be mevater, right? But not all the time. There are things where you have to stand your ground. There are things where you have to draw your line. A person wants to say, you know what, I have a thick skin, it's okay, whatever happens, doesn't, that's fine. But there are points in time where a person should be offended. Where there are things where people take liberties with my covet, and they shouldn't take liberties with my covet. So again, a person should have a little, we'll call it a little, right, pintle, a little schmeck of gaiva, a little something, very little. So the Rambam says, for example, a person who is so self-effacing, and a person who literally, again, is so detached from ego, that's called a chassid. That's called a chassid. Am I obligated to get to that level? No, I don't have an obligation. The Rambam is just telling us that such a state exists. V'im nisrachik ada emsa bilvad, v'ye anav, nikra chacham, v'zoi midas ha-chachma. He says, you know, again, if a person is just humble, that's called a chacham. V'zeu lifnim mishuras hadin. So the Rambam says something very interesting, and he uses another Talmudic adage, which is, lifnim mishuras hadin. What does lifnim mishuras hadin mean? Above and beyond the letter of the law. So a Jew, I'm obligated to live in accordance with the letter of the law. A chassid is someone who goes above and beyond the letter of the law. Lifnim mishuras hadin. I don't just do what is expected of me. See, this is part that Ramchal discusses this as well. This is part of a beautiful motif in Judaism, which is, there are two different ways that you could look at mitzvos. So you could look at mitzvos as a series of do's and don'ts, divine expectations. What's my responsibility vis-a-vis the mitzvos? What's my responsibility? Live up to the expectation, that's it. The Ramchal says there's a higher level. The higher level is when I look at mitzvos as an expression of divine will and intent. Which means that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me a mitzvah, what he's saying to me is, this thing represents something that is important to me. Well, once I know what is important to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then by definition, I have the ability to build on that, even beyond the stated requirements or expectation. So a regular good person says, okay, I have mitzvahs, I'm going to do my mitzvahs. I'm going to live up to my expectations. The chassid says, 1 second. If there's a mitzvah, and you can fill in the blank, it doesn't matter what it is. If there's a mitzvah, then I recognize that there's a hashkafas ha-mitzvah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling me something. He's communicating some type of important ideal to me. How do I perform this mitzvah? Yes, as a first step. But then take that ideal and build on it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us many mitzvahs that are related to chesed. Many mitzvahs related to chesed, which tells us what? God values chesed. God values chesed. So if I'm a tzaddik, or if I'm just a chacham, I'm a regular person, then what? I realize there are multiple mitzvahs that have to do with chesed. I'm going to fill those mitzvahs. A chassid says, well, 1 second. Now I have to look for opportunities for chesed even beyond the stated obligation or the stated framework of obligation. Because now I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves chesed. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves chesed, I have to do the mitzvahs, of course, but how do I build beyond that? That's a chassid. Lifnim mishuras hadin. And the Rambam writes it in number 9 as well. Vim haya chassid va'osa lifnim mishuras hadin. So look at this. If you look at number 10 in the Sefer Otzar HaChassidus, he quotes over here from the Rebbe, Rav Simcha Bono Pshischa, who says something so dramatically amazing. Chassid mau, or mihu. What is a chassid? So again, he uses the Maimonidean definition, ha'osa lifnim mishuras hadin. It is someone who goes above and beyond the obligation. Someone who doesn't just live by the obligations, but goes above and beyond. Get ready for this. Amar me'at darash ha-rebbe Rav Simcha Bono Pshischa, shelo yona adam achirim zeu adin. Remember, we just learned the halacha. What was the halacha? Lo sonu ish es amisa, which means what? Do not verbally harm another individual, right? Don't hurt, don't offend, don't upset. Essentially, don't make a person feel bad about themselves. That's the mitzvah. Listen to what the Rebbe says. So now, but I don't want to just be a regular Jew. I want to be a chassid. Chassid means I go lifnim mishuras hadin. I go above and beyond the stated letter of the law. I go above and beyond. Okay. So now I have losonu ishes amisa, which means I cannot harm another with my speech. What's the midas chassidus? How do I go above and beyond? V'lifnim mishuras hadin shelo yona es atzmo. Says the Rebbe so beautifully. If the mitzvah is not to harm another verbally, then the chassidus, the lifnim mishuras is going above and beyond means don't hurt yourself. If the mitzvah is not to harm another, above and beyond means don't go ahead and knock yourself down either. Take a look at number 11. Rabbi Mishnah Maseches Avos says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ve'al tirasha bifnei atzmicha. This is such a profound statement. Never, chas v'shalom, look at yourself as a rasha. Now, you have to understand the profundity of Rabbi Shimon's statement. Of course, if I'm not a rasha, I shouldn't look at myself as a rasha. But what's the novelty in this statement? What if I am a rasha? Look, let's be honest. There are some people who are rishon, right? There are. It happens within our community. Sometimes it happens in our family. Sometimes it happens with ourselves. So what if I am a rasha? Rabbi Shimon says, even if you are a rasha, never look at yourself as a rasha. Writes Rabbi Lau in number 12. What's the interpretation of this parish? Sheni, he quotes over the Rambam. Al tachsik atzmecha ki rasha. Shemitoch kach, atayotzi letarbosra legamre. This is amazing. Says Rabbi Lau, there is only one thing that comes out of looking at yourself as a rasha, which is what? It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you look at yourself as a rasha, then it is only a matter of time until you actively become that rasha. Kasher adam margish atzmo pachas erech. When a person lacks self-worth, rasha v'chote, harei hudroa ba'atzmo mikra avut. What happens when a person looks at himself as a rasha, as a person looks at himself as unworthy, then ultimately again, you know what mikra avut means? That a lost cause. It's a lost cause. I look at myself as a lost cause. Hadavar mevi'ol lidei yeyush. And if I'm a lost cause, I'm really beyond salvation, I'm beyond help. And if that's the case, ein hadavar sheyatzar es hemshech hayridaros. And if I'm a lost cause, then life simply is an ongoing downward spiral. And you'd be surprised. We often think like rock bottom is here, But you'd be surprised how low down rock bottom is. Rock bottom keeps going and going and going. He goes on, he says, "Hu eino motze otam kem shechalimud b'tfila ba'asiyas tov." When a person loses all self-worth, when a person feels like a lost cause, when a person looks in the mirror and he feels like a rasha, there is no motivation to do anything. There's no motivation to learn. There's no motivation to daven. There's no motivation to do good things. Kiladaito, memeila in sikui shietzer and amashu tov. Because the only reason I do good things is why? Because I believe that I have the ability to become a good person. Every single day I do mitzvahs for one simple reason. I'd love to say it's because I'm serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm not on that level. I do it for a simple, because I'd like to become a good person. I'd like to refine my character. I'd like to become better. I'd like to become holy. But if I don't feel that that's within my grasp, if I don't feel that that's possible, then by definition there's no motivation to do anything. So what happens? When you fall into the embrace of Yeyosh, Yeyosh is despair, Yeyosh is hopelessness. That is like falling into an abyss. Ultimately, again, Rabbi Shimon says, never view yourself as a Rasha. And I can't tell you how dramatically amazing this is. There are so many applications of this. You know, sometimes one of the greatest disservices in chinuch is sometimes, you know, we teach children about mitzvos and averos. And if you do a mitzvah, you're a... And if you do a rasha, If you do an avera, you're a rasha. Not true. If you do an avera, you know what you are? You're a human being. If you do a rush, if you do an avera, you're just like every single other mortal from Avram Avinu until now who also made their mistakes. Doing an avera doesn't make you into a rasha, but the problem is, if we go ahead and we think that when you do an avera, you become a rasha. That's what I am. Well, if I'm a rasha, then at least I'm good at something. Everybody's got to be good at something, right? So obviously the holiness thing didn't work out for me. But the Russia thing, obviously I nailed that down. I've got that down pat. So then what's the point of ever trying to dig myself out of the hole if I'm already a Russia? So Rabbi Shimon says, "Va'alti Russia bifnei atzmecha." Rabbi Shimon saying, you might really be a Russia. You might really be a card-carrying Russia. But if you ever want to turn that around, you can never look at yourself as a Russia. Because the moment you begin to look at yourself as a Russia, you're done. The moment you begin to look at yourself as a Russia, there's only one guarantee, which is you will become even a bigger Russia. Because you will fall into the arms of hopelessness and despair. You will lose yourself in that dark abyss of hate. And you will never feel the confidence to crawl back out. We all make mistakes. Some of us make lifetimes of mistakes. Some of us make dramatically overwhelming mistakes. But Rabbi Shimon says, even if deep down I feel like I may be a Russia, never look at yourself as that Russia. Rabbi Twersky says something so beautiful. He says in number 13, he says in psychology, we distinguish between guilt and shame. This is very profound. Guilt is a distressful sensation resulting from the awareness that one has done something wrong. Healthy guilt can lead to tshuva, to making amends for the wrong, and to take preventative measure to avoid a recurrence. This is very important because I want to tell you something. We live in a society that often tells us that what? You shouldn't have to feel guilty for anything. If you want it, then it's okay. If you feel it, it's okay. And if anybody makes you feel guilty, then what? Then what? They're narrow-minded. If they make you feel guilty for what you want, for what you want to do, for behavior, for this or that, then it's not true. This right and this wrong. And when I do something wrong, guilt is the most powerful emotion. Because you understand what guilt means? When you feel guilt, the scary part is when you stop feeling guilt. When you feel guilt, what that means is, I have a neshama that's holy. I have a neshama that's pure. I just did something that's impure and my neshama is telling me, something's not right. You gotta turn this around. That shows me that there are sparks of kedusha inside of me. Guilt is profound because guilt could be the catalyst to rehabilitative action. On the other hand, shame on the other hand, is a sensation that one is somehow bad. Even though one may not be able to identify why he should think of himself as being bad. To put it another way, guilt is a statement. I made a mistake. Whereas shame is a statement, I am a mistake. In the latter case, no corrective action can be taken since one has no idea of what can be corrected. If I am the mistake, then I don't know what to do. If it's me, it's who I am. If I made a mistake, then ultimately, again, it's about adjusting or readjusting my behaviors. Shame can lead to despair. In several of my writings, I point out the need for self-esteem. A person should feel that he is inherently good. Regardless of what may have transpired in the past, a person is always capable of doing good, redeeming oneself, and achieving a high level of spirituality. To think about oneself as if one were bad means that one knows that he is indeed good, but that he may have committed some wrongs which need correction. Our Mishnah uses the term bifnei atzmicha, which means that one should not think of one's etzem, his essence, one's very essence as being bad, because this may lead to despair of doing good. An incredible, incredible observation. Guilt, good. Shame, bad. Al tirasha bifnei atzmicha. No matter what you do, understand that you can never defile or sully your core. The core is always holy. The core is always holy. You know, I forgot to put it on the sheet, but there's a beautiful pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Perek Aleph Halacha. Excuse me, pasuk Hey, chapter 1, verse 5. Shalom Aleich writes in Shir HaShirim, Shechora Ani V'Na'ava. I am blackened. I am darkened, but I am beautiful. So the Mefarshim explains so beautiful. What does that mean? So Shechorani, I'm darkened. I'm blackened by what? The reference is like soot from sin. I'm darkened by sin because perhaps I've spent an entire lifetime of sinning. But here's the amazing part. The Na'ava. I am beautiful. I am beautiful. Because I have to believe that I'm beautiful, because that ultimately gives me the koach, that gives me the ability to pick myself up, to rehabilitate myself. Why am I sharing all this with you? Because if we link this back to the Kapitel and Tehillim, then perhaps you begin to understand the internal enemy that David HaMelech is combating against. David HaMelech says, Hatzileni me'ayvai, Ribono shel olam, save me from my enemies. We spoke about, again, the plurality of that word, enemies. Why plural? So we saw the Amshich, the Malbim, both explained that what? Who are the two enemies? There's the internal enemy, and then there's the external enemy. What's the internal enemy that David HaMelech is referring to? It's the enemy of self-doubt. It's the enemy of shame. You see, what David HaMelech is saying is as follows. You know, all of us sometimes have moments in life where I know that what I'm doing is right. I don't mean those people who are always right. I don't mean, because those people are most of the time wrong. I mean, let's say a normal, regular person. And I know that what I'm doing is right, but I'm getting so much negativity. So what happens over time? What happens over time? A person begins to second guess themselves. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I was so sure that I was right. I was so sure that this is the right path. I was so sure. So poor David, he's David HaMelech already. Poor David HaMelech, what is he just trying to do? Remember again, he doesn't want any of this. What does he want? What does he want? Ideally, what he wants is to move with his wife, Michal, to the countryside. Right? She'll do whatever she's going to do. He'll shepherd in the fields and leave me alone. Leave me alone. Okay, Kadosh Baruch Hu has a different plan for me. I'm the general. I'm this, I'm that. Everyone around me is telling me that I'm trying to overthrow the king. I'm pretty positive that I'm not trying to overthrow the king. I'm pretty sure that I don't want the throne. I'm pretty sure that I'm a good guy. But everyone keeps on telling me that I'm so terrible. Everyone keeps on telling me that I'm a Russia. Everyone keeps on telling me that I'm a Ramach Stalinal says, you know what? Ribono Shel Olam, I'm beginning to doubt myself. I'm beginning to, maybe I am a Rasha. Maybe I'm a busy. Maybe I'm a bad person. Maybe at the end of the day, I am all those things that everyone else tells me. And then David HaMelech says, stops, and he says, but I'm not. Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hatzileni me'ayvai. Save me from my enemies. First order is, like the Malbim says, save me from the oyev shebalev. Save me from the shame. Save me from thinking negatively about myself. Because the moment that I lose my self-esteem, the moment I lose my self-worth, the moment I lose the positive picture of myself, I'm done. Save me from the Oyev Shebalev. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, once you save me from the Oyev Shebalev, you'll help me save me from the external enemies as well. And I think David HaMelech is teaching us such an incredible lesson. Because all of us have these two sets of challenges, our internal challenges and our external challenges. And often we tend to focus our energies on the external challenges. Why? Well, we all know why. Because they're a lot easier to deal with than the internal challenges. But David HaMelech teaches us that there's a progression in life. A person has to be healthy on the inside before a person is able to face the demons that are on the outside. A person has to first address the Oyev Shebalev, the enemy within. And we, again, like I said, we all have our various kinds of enemies. And many of us are walking around with, like what Reb Shimon says, unfortunately, many of us think we are lost causes. Many of us think we are damaged goods. Many of us think that we are beyond salvation. Many of us have moved the ceiling down so dramatically low because we don't think that we could amount to all that much. And David HaMelech says, you have to battle those demons first. Whatever's going on in your kishkas, whatever's going on in your neshama, whatever's going on in your heart, in your mind, those are the things that I first have to be brave enough to confront. And only once I confront, and I'm going to say, I'm not going to say solve, because you know, sometimes you can't solve your internal enemies. Sometimes all you could do is what? Confront them and find the courage to battle them. But confronting, acknowledging, battling is a dramatic first step. And David HaMelech tells us if we keep down that derech, we will be successful. And once we're successful with vanquishing the enemies within, then in Meretz Hashem we have the koach to go ahead and acknowledge, confront, and God willing, vanquish the enemies outside. We'll stop over here. Please.
Okay, just a quick announcement. On Monday night,